Hi everyone, and welcome to this edition of Humans of Finance. This is the first episode, which will be corresponding with the website as well. Got my first guest today all the way from Argentina. How are you, Sarah?
Good. Thank you, Dan, and everyone listening.
Sarah, thank you for being brave enough to give us your story on Humans of Finance.
Sure.
I just wanted to take a few steps back because it's sort of funny in a sense where in your own story, you do write about traveling and right now you're actually not in Australia.
No. And in fact, when I wrote that story for you, I was in Cuba.
You were, which is pretty funny, isn't it? So it's almost like a full, well, I won't say a full circle, but it's interesting and it's great that tech has allowed us to do what we're doing today.
Absolutely.
Okay, so your story starts off in 2003. You finished your degree and you wanted to travel. So let's have a quick run through of who you are and your journey so far. Is that okay?
Sure, there's obviously a travel theme there that's been around for a long time. My name is Sarah Eiferman. I am a mortgage broker. I have been a mortgage broker for 16, I think it's going on 17 years now, being 2020. I was the owner of SFA Loans. The residential book was sold at the end of last year as well. So I've since transferred into commercial asset finance and I have a business consultancy as well, and I'm no longer writing residential loans.
There you go. So your story from the website as well is it takes a little bit. How do you pull it? It's similar to most people's lives where you've just pivoted and changed along your journey.
I think from the feedback at the time when we posted it, which was probably like 6 months ago now, wasn't it, Dan? There was a lot of feedback. My story is, I think, like a lot of brokers, it wasn't one of super quick success. It took me a long time to be what I considered successful as a mortgage broker in terms of volume and also satisfaction within the business myself. And that resonated with a lot of brokers. I had a lot of people reach out to me once that was posted saying, thank you for sharing your story. I'm so glad to hear it.
Just apologizing to the audience if there's a little bit of feedback issues as well, but we'll see how this particular recording goes, and I'll like to invite Sarah back later on for an additional episode as a follow-up as well.
Sure.
Anyway, just going back, the another thing to add to this as well is you entered a predominantly what I'd call a male environment or industry, and you managed to thrive. You've managed to be very successful at what you did. Tell us a bit more about that. What did you find that it was challenging? Did you find that being, you know, a female, did that hinder your success? Did that made you more hungry for success?
Okay. Look, I think it's an interesting one. Like, I have three brothers, so. We were raised in a family where you were equal regardless of gender, with the exception of the chores list that you got. But I didn't, when I was 12, I decided I wanted to stop baking chocolate cakes on the weekend and I'd mow the lawn instead. Right. And then I realized it was a lot harder to mow the lawn, so I went back to baking the chocolate cake. In terms of an industry, it wasn't something I considered. It was perhaps something I should have considered better. I do believe, and I know this may be contentious or uncomfortable for some people to hear and perhaps understand, being female in this industry does not have the same impact as it may in other industries because we're a volume-based business. Our success doesn't come from KPIs potentially within job roles. It comes from the volume that we write. And so that has not hindered my ability to grow and achieve in this industry because I am female. But it did come with some other challenges because I was female. Often clients wouldn't take me seriously when I was younger because I was young and female. So what would I know about product or policy? There were safety concerns about visiting clients. Especially I was regional for a while. I was based regionally. I used to do 1,000 kilometers a day, and even stopping to go to the toilet, you know, between Warrnambool and Horsham could be difficult if it was a truck stop. You know, you'd park your car as close to the toilet block as possible, and you'd take the car key back before we didn't have car keys. Now it's all keyless entry, but you'd take the car key with you, and you'd hope to hell that no one tried to stop you leaving the toilet block. So they're little things that women don't take for granted every day, things that we have to be aware of and consistently aware of. Like, you can't afford to not be on the lookout for any potential concerns. This is a common one that is said, but I reiterate it. Whenever I walk to my car, especially at night, I look in the back seat of the car before I enter the car. Now, I'm not sure if that's something you ever think about doing, Dan. I mean, everybody should do it for their safety, but women traditionally would check their surroundings a little better. I'm hesitant to walk in a dark car park late at night, even in a city as safe as Melbourne. So, yeah, it definitely had some impacts in terms of how I did business, but I don't think it did my ability to do business.
Yep. That's correct, because I was going to ask you both the question with regards to how did you perceive I suppose you call it your brethren or colleagues in the industry, and as well as your customers as well. And you basically answered that before I even answered it, so thank you. Now, with regards to you know, you made us just go back a step. Sorry, you're going from you started out as a broker, then you have now sort of gone through what you've gone through, and then now you've decided to go into more of the commercial SME space. And I believe you're also doing a bit of what we call business mentoring. Is that correct?
I have another brand called Helix Planning, where I do a lot of business advisory and strategy, perhaps more so than mentoring. Mentoring can be a component of it, but it's more about... That's okay. It's more about building the foundations of your business to ensure that you're able to scale and be sustainable. And one of the big things about a broker-based business, especially if you're a single operation business, is that the business is completely wrapped around your life and your life is completely wrapped around your business. So it's about creating a sustainable business model where the business can work without you if you have an accident or if you suffer an injury. It's about having in place systems and processes that will enable your business to keep working where possible, which also means if you're looking at exiting your business, well, you can go on holiday. Absolutely. Like Look, I've always traveled, but I never been able to travel without the noise of work coming through, because I was still accessible via email. So my CSM could ask me questions, clients could text or WhatsApp me. So this is the first time in over 15 years I've been able to travel without having to really worry about work.
Yep. So
which is huge.
Also the, yeah, I was going to say that because the, you know, the wonders of the technology, it's great that you can travel with work, but it also means that you don't switch off.
Exactly.
This holiday that you're actually able to completely switch off and actually enjoy your surroundings. Apart from jumping on doing this web call with me. So the other thing I was going to add though is because of what you're doing in that secondary business. I always view the fact that you take the word mortgage broker away and you strip away that sort of title and you strip away that industry. What you've got is really a business owner.
Correct.
And I'm assuming. Could be wrong, but I'm assuming that the systems, process, and so forth of what you're trying to achieve can actually assist anyone.
Well, majority of my clients for Helix are actually not mortgage brokers.
Oh, there you go.
They're outside businesses, mainly trade-based businesses, which in some instances acts as a great lead funnel for commercial and asset finance. But they're usually other business owners. I've got some large clients in the States, and some food-based service businesses in Perth, the tradies in Queensland, a skincare eco-sustainable company out of Sydney. So, yeah, not mortgage brokers.
Oh, there you go. That's very interesting.
I think there's been a perception as well for a long time that that's something that our aggregators should offer us. However, being a business owner, it's your responsibility to ensure that your business is in ship shape, that mm-hmm. it's got everything sorted, that the structure and the maintenance of that business and the direction that you're taking it is actually defined.
Well, I mean, it's really self-development, isn't it?
And exactly.
I guess with most things, you get bogged down by the busy days and so forth that you mm-hmm. actually forget to actually say, do a bit of planning around what is a threat, what is not a threat, what is kind of, what can actually assist your business. I mean, it's good. You hear people saying you should do it like what, once a year, once every 2 years or so. But the fact of the matter is some people are just too busy and they just forget, or they don't think that this is something they look into. So
no, they don't. Look, to be honest, you should be doing it monthly.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. You should be spending half an hour at least per month cross-checking mm-hmm. to see whether or not you're on your roadmap to your success goal. Whatever and looks like.
I guess taking another step or another way to view it is almost like having a coach is having someone you can be who can hold you account.
Correct.
Terms of so what you're trying to do, isn't it?
I'm less of a business coach and more of an accountability coach. Mm-hmm. So a business coach is somebody that you talk to, that you approach with a problem, who helps feedback your own knowledge to you and mirror back to you for the solution. They don't necessarily help you find the solution. Mm-hmm. In the traditional sense, the international standards of business coaching, it's not to actually provide you with the solution. It's to help you problem solve. So that's why I often refer to myself more as a business strategist and an accountability mm-hmm. coach than just a business coach, for that exact reason, is that I actually 100% hold you accountable. And some people find that uncomfortable. So they like the idea of it until...
they like the idea of being an owner and a boss, but they don't like the idea of someone telling them that, hey, what did you promise that you'll do this month? So
it's just that foot in your butt that you may have got. Yeah. If you were employed, your manager usually did that role. And so it's one of the freedom things that we love about being self-employed, but it's also one of the biggest detriments to your ability to succeed in business. Where from a very young age, where ability and approval is something that we're taught in our family units. And so it's something that we're quite used to having. It's like that natural thing that's around us. And then you go into self-employed life and you're so busy trying to run your business and return your phone calls and take on your lenders for policy that it goes out the window. And suddenly it's 5 years later and then you go, oh, hold on. And that's where someone like an accountability coach.
Yeah.
An accountability coach can just be another broker that you partner with. And you guys set some goals once a month together and you ring each other and say, how are you going? And tick the boxes. It can be that simple.
Or you
can formally engage somebody.
I would always encourage that people formally engage someone, because like most things, when it's free, you kind of take the mickey out of it. You might be, doing it for the first 3 months or so because it's free.
Yep.
And then there is always an excuse. You know, behavior itself is learned and can only be modified if you do it every day, for at least a month, they say. But if you're talking about catching up once a month and it's free, it's so easy. It'd be incredibly easy for me to, or most people anyway, to, because they're busy, but they're running their own business, to just to make an excuse.
That's very true.
But anyway, I'm digressing a little bit. I'm trying to keep this talk at a certain time frame. We're now crossing the 15-minute barrier, and hopefully, we haven't lost listeners. But that said, it's a very interesting journey that you've got, and I'd love to come back and have a chat to you further. I do encourage our listeners out there to jump on to the Humans of Finance story that Sarah wrote beautifully, and have a read of that too, because it's a fascinating story. Every story is fascinating, but if you want to have a look at one where person coming out of university, not sure what we want to do, want to travel, and just has this determination to do well in a field. now I know that you don't actually think about things. You just in terms of, you know, I don't think you actually put why you wanted to be a broker in there, did you?
Right at the start, at the time, my mum was in real estate, and she said it's really hard to find a quality broker. And you were talking 15, 16 years ago, longer, 17 years ago, 2003. So,
yes, there you go.
Like, it's a lot of people joining paragraph. The industry, I thought it would be easier than it is. And I think that's the biggest lesson when entering this industry. So, you know, impetus to stay. I think they say of the enrollments that you get in the first 12 months, 30% of them survive in broking. And of that 30%, only 50% of that 30%. So 15% of the original intake into broking each year makes it to the end of the second year.
Wouldn't the stats in terms of ASIC registered new businesses say the same thing as well?
Not necessarily.
Or close to?
No. Most businesses don't make it past 5 years in terms of SMEs. Mm-hmm. But I think broking is different because people don't see it as a business first. They see it as a finance broker or a mortgage broking first, and then the business second.
Business second, yep. And now you've gone to being a, how do you put it? I think most people call themselves mortgage brokers. And that's what he pigeonholed them in terms of doing a specific thing already. Whereas you've done an amazing job growing.
That's
the right word, you know, or evolving.
The big buzzword at the moment is diversification. I think you had a post on it the other day as well.
I did.
With diversification. Nicole. Mm-hmm. Nicole wrote it. Nicole.
Yes.
I apologize in advance. It's early here. And, you know, it's quite true. If you want to diversify, but with diversification, you actually need education first. You've really got to learn and research the topics and know what you're talking about. And if you're looking to diversify from residential broking into finance or asset finance, commercial lending, I'd highly recommend that you have a chat to CAFPA, the Commercial and Asset Finance Brokers Association of Australia, because they've actually got a new course out in Certificate 4 and a diploma in finance broking, but commercial. And it will teach you all the things that you need to know to do commercial lending properly.
There you go. 6 out of 10 customers go to a broker to do their mortgages, but yet only around about 1 out of 10 go to a broker for commercial and asset finance.
Correct.
So this is definitely a place to look into and to I suppose you could call it add to your armory of services that you could offer to your customers.
Absolutely.
But Sarah, thank you so much for coming on to this podcast today.
Sure.
The sound, I do apologize because, well, I'll say it's because you're in Argentina and I'm here in Yarraville in Victoria, and we got incredibly bad NBN. But I hope you have a wonderful time on your holiday, and when you come back, let's do a coffee.
Sure, gracias.
Gracias, thank you.
Okay, adios, con gusto.
Adios.
See you later, guys.
I'll